The following program is for informational purposes only, and it's not a recommendation to buy or sell Bitcoin or any particular investment or product, nor a recommendation to pursue any particular purchase or investment strategy. The brands, opinions, advertisements, and recommendations expressed by this program are the opinions and recommendations of the individuals creating the show and not the LTB Network.
Well, hello, KCAA radio listeners and Dave Ramsey listeners and people listening anywhere on earth through the internet and through the podcast. I'm Paul Boyer. You're listening to the Mad Money Machine, and what a week it has been in Bitcoin. We will cover the gamut of it right here on the Mad Money Machine.
Broadcasting from the Bitcoin bunker, six blocks below, brandishing the blockchain to fight good versus evil. This is Bitcoin versus the man. This is the battle of the century. This is the Mad Money Machine.
Thank you for joining me. Coming up this week, we will talk about the Mt. Gox debacle. We'll talk about the Bitcoin ban. We'll have a spin at the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I'll pull something out of the Mad Money Machine Bitcoin Tool Crib. We'll have Satoshi's Corner. We'll have the Merchant of the Week, the Altcoin of the Week, and the Market Minute. All here on the Mad Money Machine. Bitcoin, Dogecoin, and Kittycoin walk into the Mt. Gox Tavern. Bitcoin orders a beer, Dogecoin orders a bowl of water, and Kittycoin orders a saucer of milk. Well, they enjoy their refreshments, and time comes to pay. Bitcoin says, "I got this, fellas. Your money's no good here." Turns to the bartender and says, "How much do I owe you?" Bartender says, "That'll be $10. Bitcoin gives him the $20. Bartender gives him $10 in change. Bitcoin says, "You didn't give me my change." Bartender gives him $10 in change. Bitcoin says, "You didn't give me my change." Bartender gives him $10 in change. Bitcoin says, "You didn't give me my change." Bartender gives him $10 in change. Bitcoin says, "You didn't give me my change." Bartender gives him $10 in change. Bitcoin says, "You didn't give me my change." Bartender gives him $10 in change. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Mad Money Machine. I'm so glad you continue to join me, even after last week's parody. Well, the really big news, the big news this past week, of course, happened last Saturday. It was millibit conversion day. Yeah, we'll get to Mt. Gox and we'll get to the Bitcoin ban in just a little bit. But millibit conversion day, that's the really big deal. Everything that is priced should be expressed now in millibits. All the tools you used should be converted into millibits. So, go out, for example, when you go out to blockchain.info, go down to the very bottom right side in the browser and click that little button there to express values in millibits. When you go to bitcoinity.com, click in the upper right, you want to show things in millibits. In your various apps and in your various wallets, Bitcoin QT, Electrum, go in there and click the value, click the setting in the preferences, express values in millibits. And when talking about the number of currency units you have, use millibits. For example, what's the total amount of millibits that'll ever be in circulation? 21 billion. How many are in circulation right now? 12.4 billion millibits. How many millibits are generated per block? 25,000. How many millibits did Mt. Gox lose? The number reportedly is 744 million millibits. And now on to the Mt. Gox story. You know, I record my shows on Monday for release on Tuesday. And so it was Monday night last week, of course, that the Mt. Gox story broke. They shuttered up their website and all the scandalous information came out. There are many more places than here to find out exactly what's going on, or actually to find out not much of what's going on at Mt. Gox. We've heard a little bit from Charlie Shrem. We've heard a little bit from Roger Ver. I don't have any information. I don't have any direct contacts that have any information. I haven't gotten any information from Mt. Gox directly. I don't want to report on what's going on at Mt. Gox. I suggest you go to either Reddit/r/Bitcoin or CoinDesk to read more about the Mt. Gox scandal. Also, of course, go to Let's Talk Bitcoin. Adam is working feverishly on reports out there. He's done some investigative forensic analysis into the blockchain and looking at seeing exactly how many coins Mt. Gox still has. We don't know what's going on. We don't know if he's under a gag order. I'm talking about Mark Karpolis out at Mt. Gox now. We don't know what's going on out there. We don't know if he's under a gag order. We don't know if he lost the keys to his coins. We don't know if they were stolen. We don't know. And I can't report with any accuracy what's going on out there. So why waste your time with that? Instead, I'll tell you that there's a website called Empty Gox, E-M-P-T-Y, Gox, which redirects you now to Kraken.com, another Bitcoin exchange. Also in the news, Second Market took the opportunity to announce that they are going to launch a U.S. Bitcoin exchange. But why would they do it in New York? Is New York the most friendly Bitcoin state there is? Okay, New York's the financial capital of the world. And yes, I guess you got to play nice with the regulators eventually. But you know, I'm really excited about distributed exchanges. Can't wait till that happens. And you know what I'm talking about there, right? Getting rid of a trusted third party. You know, that's one of the key themes in Satoshi's original papers, getting rid of the trusted third parties. Well, if we have an exchange, guess what? We've introduced a trusted third party back into the system. I think Satoshi would really prefer there be distributed exchanges. Allow people to exchange in a distributed fashion currency for millibit. Let's talk about the Bitcoin ban. Let's go way back in history. Turn the clock back in history. And I want to talk about a gentleman named A. James Manchin. I went to school in West Virginia. Got my bachelor's in electrical engineering from West Virginia Institute of Technology. And I think A. James Manchin came to speak there, if I'm recalling correctly. Who is he? He is a West Virginia Democratic politician who served as a member of the House of Delegates from 48 to 50 and 98 to 2003, and as Secretary of State, 97 through 85, and as State Treasurer, 85 through 89. He was born April 7th, 1927. That's about 34 years and 4 months before Barack Obama. And passed away on November 3rd, 2003. So while I was going to school there, I think he came and spoke. And for some reason, I don't know whether he was passing them out or I actually got it so inspired that I went and bought a poster with him on it. He's pictured standing atop a pile of rusted junk, such as an old car, rusted out car, and rusted mattress springs and milk bottles, in some kind of crazy 1920s style zoot suit, maybe with a fur coat on, and certainly a fedora, looking askance and slightly heavenward, perhaps with an arm rested on one leg propped up on some junk. And the big caption at the bottom of this poster read, "Let us purge our proud peaks of these jumbled jungles of junkery." And it really just caught my fancy of some crazy politician and his publicity stunt. And of course, I love alliteration. Well, A. James Manchin was impeached by the House of Delegates on March 30th, 1989, amid a controversy over bad investments that lost the state $279 million, mainly during the time period between April and June 1987. The impeachment resolution blamed Manchin for negligence in delegating and supervising the investment fund, making improper investments and covering up losses. He initially vowed to stay in office, though conviction by the Senate would have meant losing his eligibility to run for office again and could have cost him his pension. So he resigned before his trial by the state Senate was completed. So that's little history. Now let's fast forward a little bit closer to the present. His nephew, Joe Manchin, was born August 24th, 1947. That's 20 days short of exactly 14 years before Barack Obama. He was the 34th governor of West Virginia from January 2005 through November 15th, 2010. And then on November 15th, 2010, he was sworn in to fill the U.S. Senate seat left vacant by Robert C. Byrd. Now, among other committees, Joe Manchin is a member of the Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, whose chair is Tim Johnson of South Dakota. Wikipedia says Manchin most recently made headlines for allegedly saying he would vote to repeal the U.S. Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, a hallmark law of the Obama administration aimed at expanding public and private insurance coverage, though he later backtracked on the statements. Well, good old Joe Manchin made news this past week among the Bitcoin community when he wrote a letter sent to six people: Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, Fed Chair Janet Yellen, Comptroller of the Currency Thomas Curry, Commodities Future Trading Commission Acting Chair Mark Wetjen, FDIC Chairman Martin Gruenberg, and SEC Chair Elise White. I thought I might read it, but then I thought, nah, too long. Here's the key points. He says Bitcoin is unregulated. It allows users to participate in illegal activity. He says it's unstable and disruptive to our economy. He says Bitcoin has a unique fingerprint, which allows for anonymous and irreversible transactions. Which is kind of an oxymoron, sounds to me like. If it has unique fingerprint, how can it be anonymous? He says anonymity makes it difficult, if not impossible, to reverse fraudulent transactions. And of course, in the last show, I talked about how it's a feature of Bitcoin that you can't reverse transactions. He says it's a haven for the black market, and I'd say so is cash. He says a handful of countries and their banks, which compete with Bitcoin, I'd have to add, have cautioned about Bitcoin. He says we should be leading in banning Bitcoin. And I say we should lead in legalizing Bitcoin. He mentions the price swings of Bitcoin. And I say, so what? So does gold. So do stocks. They all swing in price relative to the dollar. He says a recent media report indicated Bitcoin deflated 98%. And you're saying that that's a bad thing? Isn't that kind of dumb? Doesn't it make it great for the holder that the value of their Bitcoin goes up 98%? He says illegal goods or gambling allowed by Bitcoin make me wary of it. He said the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee issued a warning about Bitcoin and its implications of its use for taxation. Oh, now we're getting to the main gist of it, I think. And he urges regulators to work together, act quickly, and prohibit this dangerous currency from harming hard-working Americans. Well, we looked up the largest donors to Joe Manchin's campaign. Many of them are energy companies, of course, being from coal fields of West Virginia. But one of the top ones in his list was J.P. Morgan. So the senator wants to ban Bitcoin. Remember what Jim Cramer said about Bitcoin?
My name is Matt. What do you think about Bitcoin? You think it's a good investment?
No, I don't. Okay. I think that the government's going to get smart and outlaw it, okay? So you have to be very careful.
Oh, really? When do you think that's going to be?
I don't know, but they're going to get wise, believe me.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, good old Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia. Well, let me take you back just two shows ago when I talked about how New York was getting its fingers into the Bitcoin pie and New Jersey was and Florida was. And what did I say back then? Can't wait till West Virginia, Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, Texas, Montana, Nevada, North Dakota all get their fingers into the Bitcoin pie. Well, I apologize and I take it all back. I don't want all these states to get their fingers into the Bitcoin pie at all. Well, let's see what responses the Honorable Joe Manchin drew from others in the Bitcoin community. Patrick Merck, the general counsel of the Bitcoin Foundation, wrote a letter to the Honorable Joe Manchin, in which he said, "We do not believe that this is the right time in U.S. economic history to turn away from innovations that offer improvements in the jobs picture and the economy. If Bitcoin does not flourish in the United States, it will flourish elsewhere, and the United States will cede leadership to the countries with more foresighted approach to innovation and economic progress. There's a lot to learn about Bitcoin, how it works, and what its effects on U.S. society will be. There's no need to fear Bitcoin or overreact to the challenges that accompany its huge potential benefits. We would be happy to meet with you and your staff at your convenience, as we've done with dozens of other congressional offices and government agencies. Fred Wilson also wrote a letter to the Honorable Joe Manchin. It says, when something as new and as different as Bitcoin emerges, it's tempting to want to put the genie back into the bottle and protect ourselves from it. But thankfully, the U.S. did not do that with the internet. The impact of the commercial internet on the U.S. economy and our society as a whole has been massive and overwhelmingly positive over the past 20 years. We should approach Bitcoin in exactly the same way, and if we do, I expect the benefits we will see will be equally important, impactful, and beneficial to our economy and our society. And now let's hear what Fed Chair Janet Yellen said in response to the Honorable Joe Manchin.
To the best of my knowledge, there's no intersection at all in any way between Bitcoin and banks that the Federal Reserve has the ability to supervise and regulate. So the Federal Reserve simply does not have authority to supervise or regulate Bitcoin in any way. But it certainly would be appropriate, I think, for Congress to ask questions about what the right legal structure would be.
Well, they can ask the question, and here's the answer. Legalize it and make it lawful money.
Yellen also noted that because there's no central issuer or network operator, that Bitcoin is going to be very hard to regulate. Larry, we're going to have to see how this one plays out.
See, this is really important. This is one of my points.
Okay, here we go. We get to hear Larry Kudlow's opinion now of Bitcoin.
This is one of my points is what Ms. Yellen said. The Fed cannot regulate it. They don't have the authority to regulate it. But more importantly, there's no central issuer. Money has to have a central authority. That's the way it works.
Okay, Larry, how about this? There is a centralized blockchain. That's how it works.
And there's no network operations.
Yeah, there's something called the internet.
Therefore, it is not, let me emphasize this, it is not a payment system.
Well, let me emphasize this. It is a payment system, and I have used it as such.
Now, I don't care. People can trade whatever assets they want to trade. That's none of my business. I'm a free market guy. But money is different. Money has to run through central banks and operate in payment systems. This is not and never has been a reliable medium of exchange.
Well, how is it he can be so wrong and get paid, what, hundreds of thousands of dollars for doing this TV show, and I can be so right and get paid, well, nothing for doing this show? Makes me wonder, maybe I'm wrong after all. Maybe he's the one that's right. He's the one that's making the money. I'm not making any money, so therefore he must be right. And the Honorable Joe Manchin must be right. Let's ban Bitcoin. It's not a very good medium of exchange anyway.
You're listening to Paul Boyer's Mad Money Machine.
Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of Bitcoin gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their Bitcoin philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Machine Episode 10 is... Ooh. Interesting. This name I left on the roulette wheel from when this was an investing show and didn't replace it. It's Harry Brown. Harry Brown, born June 17th, 1933, that's 28 years and 2 months before Barack Obama, and passed away March 1st, 2006, was an American free market libertarian writer and the Libertarian Party's 1996 and 2000 candidate for President of the United States. He's also a well-known investment advisor for over 30 years. He's the originator of the permanent portfolio concept. And that is the concept I latched onto when I did my investing show. You know, in the investing show, I started out trying to pick stocks like Jim Cramer said to do. And then I got interested in just index funds. And then I realized I don't even want to pick index funds. And I certainly don't want actively traded index funds. Harry Brown had the most sensible investment scheme that I'd ever seen. I had analyzed it backwards and forwards, ups and downs, past and present, not future, and decided that he was right. It's the way to go. And what is it? He basically says, put all of your investments in just four things. One, S&P stock market index. It's a low-cost mutual fund or a low-cost ETF that invests in all the biggest stocks of the United States. 2, long-term U.S. Treasury bonds, 20 years or greater. This is typically the 30-year bond of the U.S. government. 3, gold, and specifically gold bullion or gold coins. And 4, cash or treasuries. And the result of all this is the mixing of these 4 different assets smooths out the returns over time, and you're not going to get wild gains in a portfolio like this, but you're also not going to get wild losses in a portfolio like this. For example, during the 2008 stock market debacle, the portfolio was only down about 3% or so. Last year, the portfolio was down about 3% as well when the stock market rose, but it was because of gold and bonds had a bad year last year. But what would Harry Brown say about Bitcoin? That's the real question. Bitcoin was invented 3 years after he passed away. I think he would like it. I would think he wouldn't want you to put 25% of your wealth into it, but I think he would want you to experiment with it. I don't think he'd want you to actively trade it, because he always said on his investment shows, you can't predict where the market's going to go. Certainly don't listen to anyone that ever tries to predict the market. On one of his shows, he said, go back and listen to some investment show from a month ago and their predictions for the economic future, and just see how it didn't work out. Or go pull out a newsletter from a year ago that someone tried to predict the market and just see how it didn't work out. He says, no one can predict the future. Humans are not molecules. Humans are people that have their own decisions and their own thoughts and ideas, and they're the ones that influence the market. And so it is in Bitcoin. Obviously, things like Mt. Gox affect the price in the short term, but in the long term, no one knows what's really going to happen with the Bitcoin market. He would say, don't try to day trade Bitcoin. Don't try to trade it. I think he'd say what I've been saying. Buy Bitcoin, spend Bitcoin, donate Bitcoin, and replenish your Bitcoin. Well, we miss Harry Brown and his wisdom. If you'd like more information about Harry Brown, go to harrybrown.org, and Brown has an E on the end of it. Congratulations, Harry Brown, you're the guru on Mad Money Machine, Episode 10. So, gold is one of the 4 main investments you need to own. And speaking of gold, and speaking of Jim Cramer, here's what Jim Cramer has to say about gold on the Glenn Beck program.
I am concerned that we have printed so much money that the stock market's bogus. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Well, you know, that's why I've always told people, put some in gold. Please, put some in gold.
Right.
I believe in it. I have some. It's the antidote to the currency.
Right.
And when people say, you know what, when I say put some in gold, people think he's a gold bug. I am a believer that gold will retain its value.
Right.
And so therefore, everyone should have
right.
a good percentage of it.
Put everything in anything.
No, but yeah. I think that that's the antidote, yeah. because I think, look, our grandchildren are going to be looking at this deficit and say, why didn't Dad buy some, well, 70, buy some gold, man? What was
At some point, we have $17 trillion in debt. At some point, we have $40 trillion in debt. And the only thing that's going to be worth anything is an asset.
So give it another 5 years and another 10x in growth, and I'm sure Jim Cramer will come around and recommend Bitcoin. If you're listening to this on KCAA Radio 1050 AM in California, grab your telephone right now. I want to figure out if anyone in California is listening to this show live. So on your telephone, type in this phone number, 571-366-7121. That's 571-366-7121. Call it. And just leave your name and what time you're calling. Call right now. Right now. 571-366-7121. I want to see how many people are listening to this live in California. 571-366-7121. And if you're listening via podcast, feel free to call that number. Leave a question, comment, complaint, or criticism of the Mad Money Machine. Thank you. Time now for Satoshi's Corner, or as Satoshi would say,
Satoshi no Corner.
Well, previously on the Mad Money Machine, we have read from Satoshi's original paper, Bitcoin, a Peer-to-Peer Electronic Cash System. I read the abstract and I read the introduction, and I thought it worked out pretty well. So let's keep going. Section 2 is called Transactions, and it's only 3 paragraphs long. He says, we define an electronic coin as a chain of digital signatures. And let me just step in here for a second and say, you know, it's important to remember that bitcoins and coins, certainly not physical things, but they're also not on your wallet. They're in the blockchain. They are accounts on a ledger. And miners, when they successfully perform a computation to verify blocks, they're rewarded with credits on the chain. These are the coins. And then they can trade those around with other people, or, you know, sell them for fiat currency on an exchange or whatever. But it's important to remember then that the coins are things that there are pieces of account on the blockchain. So let's continue. Each owner transfers the coin to the next by digitally signing a hash of the previous transaction and the public key of the next owner and adding these to the end of the coin. So let me step in here again. What he's saying is you transfer ownership of that credit on the blockchain, this coin. Continuing, a payee can verify the signatures to verify the chain of ownership. The problem, of course, is the payee can't verify that one of the owners did not double spend the coin. A common solution is to introduce a trusted central authority, or mint, that checks every transaction for double spending. After each transaction, the coin must be returned to the mint to issue a new coin. And only coins issued directly from the mint are trusted not to be double spent. The problem with this solution is that the fate of the entire money system depends on the company running the mint, with every transaction having to go through them, just like a bank. We need a way for the payee to know that the previous owners did not sign any earlier transactions. For our purposes, the earliest transaction is the one that counts, so we don't care about later attempts to double spend. The only way to confirm the absence of a transaction is to be aware of all transactions. In the mint-based model, the mint was aware of all transactions and decided which arrived first. To accomplish this without a trusted party, transactions must be publicly announced. And here we come to the first footnote. Talk about it in a minute. To accomplish this without a trusted party, transactions must be publicly announced, and we need a system for participants to agree on a single history of the order in which they were received. The payee needs proof that at the time of each transaction, the majority of nodes agreed that it was the first received. So Satoshi is basically building up the argument for this blockchain that is the central global ledger of all transactions for these credits, these coins, these bitcoins. Now, the first footnote he refers to there is by W. Day, D-A-I, article written in 1998. That's 10 years before Satoshi's paper. The article titled B-Money, and the article can be found at weidai.com/bmoney.txt. Let me read the first part of that article. It says, I'm fascinated by Tim May's crypto anarchy. And so that, of course, begs the question, who's Tim May? According to Wikipedia, he's a technical and political writer. He was an electronic engineer and senior scientist at Intel in the company's early history. He's most noted for having solved the alpha particle problem, which was affecting the reliability of integrated circuits as device features reached a critical size where a single alpha particle could change the state of a stored value and cause a single event upset. But he was a founding member of and has been one of the most voluminous contributors to the Cypherpunk's electronic mailing list. He wrote extensively on cryptography and privacy from the 1990s through 2003. He wrote a substantial cypherpunk-themed FAQ, the Cyphernomicon, which incorporated an earlier piece called the Crypto-Anarchist Manifesto. In his essay True Nims and Crypto-Anarchy was included in a reprint of Werner Vinge's novel True Names. Well, according to Wikipedia, it says he is retired as of 2003. Interesting that we haven't heard from Tim May, I guess, since 2003. Is that true? Well, anyway, continuing with We Day's B-Money article, says, I'm fascinated by Tim May's crypto-anarchy. Unlike the communities traditionally associated with the word anarchy, in a crypto-anarchy, the government is not temporarily destroyed, but permanently forbidden and permanently unnecessary. It's a community where the threat of violence is impotent because violence is impossible, and violence is impossible because its participants cannot be linked to their true names or physical locations. Until now, it's not clear, even theoretically, how such a community could operate. A community is defined by the cooperation of its participants, and efficient cooperation requires a medium of exchange, parentheses, money, and a way to enforce contracts. Traditionally, these services have been provided by the government or government-sponsored institutions, and only to legal entities. In this article, I describe a protocol by which these services can be provided to and by untraceable entities. And then he describes a protocol which involves the creation of money, the transfer of money, the effecting of contracts, the conclusion of contracts, and the enforcement of contracts. And I think the key point Satoshi took away from all of this, of course, is that the transactions are broadcast so that everybody can see them. And of course, the other key point, which he comes to time and time again, is the lack of need for a trusted central third party. He really does emphasize that time and time again, doesn't he? The lack of need for a trusted central third party. I wonder what he'd think about all this Mt. Gox nonsense. I think he'd be especially ashamed that it is Japanese. Okay, let's roll the dice and play Merchant of the Week. I've got a 195-sided die and another 10-sided die. It will go out to spendbitcoins.com/places. I'll pick the page number and the item on the page, and we'll find this week's Bitcoin Merchant of the Week. Here we go. And it lands on 136. That's page 136. And our 10-sided die says number 7. And the winner this time is HughSki.com, which goes to ColorHug. The website says ColorHug is an open source display colorimeter. It allows you to calibrate your screen so it can display accurate colors. Have you ever taken a photo and wondered why it does not look the same on your screen as it did on the camera? It's probably because the LCD display on your computer has never been calibrated. This means colors can look washed out, tinted with certain shades, or with different color casts. Using the ColorHug takes about 30 minutes to take several hundred measurements, from which the client software creates an ICC color profile. This color profile can then be saved and used to make colors look correct on your monitor. I went to the website. Looks like it cost about 60 British pounds. And if you look around the checkout screen, you can find a little tiny link at the bottom that says Pay in Bitcoin, which will take you to a BitPay page and allow you to buy the ColorHug with Bitcoin. So congratulations, ColorHug. You're the Bitcoin Merchant of the Week. Let's pull something out of the Madman Machine Bitcoin Tool Crib. Well, today I want to go back to the fundamentals and pull something out of the tool crib that everybody needs to have a look at if you haven't already. One of the key wallet technologies available out there for Bitcoin, and that is, of course, Electrum. Yes, of course, you can use the original Bitcoin-QT wallet. Why would you want to use Electrum? Well, the one thing I like about it is it's instant on. Your client does not download the entire blockchain. It uses a remote server for that. And your wallet can be recovered from a secret seed. Your seed and private keys are not sent to the server. Instead, information received from the server is verified using SPV, which is Simplified Payment Verification, and we will read about that from Satoshi's original paper. Now, there are several public servers available, which you can switch instantly. You can use the same wallet on different computers, and it will auto-synchronize. You can use cold storage with Electrum. You can have secure offline wallets and still safely spend from an online computer. And it is open. You can export your private keys into other Bitcoin clients. It's been around since November 2011, so it is trusted and audited and open source. Electrum comes in several user interfaces that share the same wallet code. There's the classic Qt version. There's the Lite version. Versions for Windows, Mac, Linux, and Android. One of the little tips I might share with you when you use a wallet like this is you can go in and edit the description of the transaction that appears under the History tab. When you buy something with Bitcoin using Electrum, go in and edit the description and say what it is you spent your Bitcoin on. And the last tip I'll give you is make sure to go into the Electrum Preferences, which is located under the Tools menu, and go down to the fourth item there and click your base unit and change it to millibits. Well, that is the Mad Money Machine tool of the week, Electrum. And like the best things in life, it's free. And now, the Mad Money Machine Altcoin of the Week. Last Friday, when I was putting together notes for this segment of the show, I was looking at this coin, this altcoin, and it was number 3 of the mineable coins out there with a $224 million market cap. Well, today, Monday, March 3rd, I'm looking at, I go out to a website called CoinMarketCap to look at all the altcoins sorted by market cap, and now the coin is number 2 in ranking of mineable coins, and it's over $500,000 in valuation. The 24-hour price change on this coin is up 143%. I guess it's the hottest altcoin in the world. Price as I'm looking at it is $48 per coin. There are 10.5 million of them in existence. And this is the coin that everyone in Iceland is going to get 31.8 of them starting March 25th. Of course, I'm talking about Aurora coin. As I was watching the golf tournament this weekend, the Honda Classic, it was looking like Rory McIlroy was going to win this thing. And I thought, oh, that'll be neat. I can talk about Rory McIlroy and Aurora coin being from the same country. And of course, that's stupid because Rory McIlroy is from Ireland and Aurora coin is representing Iceland. One letter difference. Iceland is a country with ice and Ireland is a country with ire, I guess. Nonetheless, Rory did not win. He came in second place. And ironically enough, Aurora coin right now is in second place. When you create an altcoin, it's all about the marketing hype. How can you get the mind share of the world to support your coin? Dogecoin rides on the internet meme. Ron Paul coin caught on maybe among Ron Paul supporters, but then let's take a look at where it is in the list. I don't even see Ron Paul coin on the list at CoinMarketCap anymore. I don't know what happened. I don't really care. So what are the motivations for someone creating an altcoin? Someone could either be genuinely interested in advancing the technology by creating a coin that has some special properties, or it could just be a pump and dump scheme where somebody wants to create a coin, have the largest amount of share of the coin, and then promote it so that other people will buy it and pay them the dollars for basically cloning Bitcoin and giving it a funny new name. Where does Aurora coin fall in this scheme? What are the motivations behind Aurora coin? And is Aurora coin winning the marketing share? Well, I do think they've got a winner here because what they're doing is they're they're saying that they're going to give 31.8 Aurora coin, symbol AUR, to every person living in Iceland. So Aurora coin is based on Litecoin, and it'll be started by what they call an airdrop of Aurora coins to the Icelandic nation, designed to reach almost every Icelander. It's a one-time event that will create conditions for Icelanders to start using the currency by providing them with a start and making them aware of the currency and its possibilities. After the airdrop, the only way to acquire Aurora coins will be through mining and transacting. The airdrop will start on March 25th, 2014. Now, they have a national ID database created by the government, and that'll be used for this purpose of giving it out to all the citizens. On their website, auroracoin.org, they say, although the thorough registration of the entire Icelandic nation into one database is unfortunate, it creates opportunities to reach a large part of the public through various means. They say about 330,000 Icelanders will be able to claim 31.8 Aurora coin each over the following year. And they have a blueprint on their website of the schedule of the stages of how they're going to release this coin. Stage one, everyone will be able to claim 31.8 Aurora coin. That works out to be 10.5 million coins. That first stage will last 4 months. Then, stage two, the airdrop is reset. Every Icelander will be able to claim a part of the coins left over from stage one. They'll take the total amount of coins remaining, divided by the population, 330,000, give all the citizens the chance to grab those coins up. That'll last 4 months. Then stage three, the same thing happens again. Take all the remaining coins, divided by 330,000, and last 4 months. They say in their blueprint that they may repeat that process, go into stage four, stage five, and so forth, as needed. They say that if more than 6% of the pre-mined coins are left after stage three, that amount of coins in excess of 6% will just be destroyed. And then the 6% that they keep, will half of that will go into the development team. So basically 3% of the coins will go back to the developers and or the foundation for Aurora coin. And the other half will go to a charity or charities decided by the community. So I think this is an excellent marketing scheme, and it's proven by the fact that it's now the number two coin in the world. Question is, will we see coins for other countries? Will we see Her Majesty's coin for Great Britain? Wiener Schnitzel coin for Germany? Alpine coin for Switzerland? Croissant coin for France? Or maybe even Appalachia coin for West Virginia? Well, there is a block explorer for Aurora coin. blockexplorer.auroracoin.eu. I gotta say, congratulations to developers of Aurora coin. That's hard to say. Congratulations to the developers of Aurora coin. You've got a great marketing plan. And I wish you all the best of luck. That is our altcoin of the week. Mad Money Machine, March 4th, 2014. Aurora coin.
You're listening to Paul Boyer's Mad Money Machine.
Earlier, we talked about Harry Brown and how he recommended you purchase one quarter of your portfolio and put it into an S&P 500 index fund. And I talked about how what I thought he might think about Bitcoin and that he might recommend that we do look into it. Well, Warren Buffett got on CNBC today and he talked about both of those things, the S&P 500 index fund and Bitcoin. And guess which one he likes and which one he doesn't.
He points out that even in times of war, the place where you see the most punishment in terms of an investment would be in cash, that cash really loses a lot of its value. So what does he like right now? He says for people who aren't professional investors, people who are trying to invest at home but they don't do this for a living, what he really likes are index funds that track the S&P 500. And he says the low-cost ones are really the best ones. In fact, in his annual letter to shareholders, he pointed out that for his wife, in his will, he has set aside some money from her. He's told the trustee in that situation that of that, 90% should go into a Vanguard index fund. The other 10% should be in bonds.
It's a very, very low-cost index fund, and there are others. But there are others that aren't so low-cost, and keeping costs to a minimum is enormously important in investing, whether it's farms or buildings in New York but particularly in stocks. I mean, if you're in effect paying out 1 or 2% annually of your portfolio, that's a big, big tax that you don't have to pay.
So what does Buffett not like right now? That would be Bitcoin. He says that Bitcoin right now looks a little bit tulip-like to him.
It's not a currency. I mean, it does not meet the test of a currency. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not around in 10 or 20 years.
Why does it not meet the definition of a currency?
Well, because people say, well, I'll sell you goods in bitcoins, but they change the price of those every time the price of the dollar changes in relation to the bitcoin. They're pricing off the dollar.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that the yen and the euro and the peso and the British pound and the Argentinian dollar weren't currencies. Or maybe Warren Buffett's just never been out of the country and he doesn't realize that a can of beans can be priced in something other than a dollar. Let's take a minute, like we always do, to look at the market for millibits. Well, the beginning of last week was pretty volatile with the collapse of Mt. Gox. Bitcoin's out at Bitstamp, traded as low. Somebody picked up some millibits for 40 cents, but mostly they traded around 50 cents. Then a couple of days later, and for much of the past week, the end of last week through the weekend, they've traded between 55 cents and 60 cents. Up until the last few hours here on Monday, they've shot up to as high as 71 cents out at Bitstamp, currently trading at about 67 cents. The total number of millibits in circulation, 12.43 billion, that works out to a market cap of $8.28 billion. And that translates to a reward per block to the miners of $16,662. And transaction fees are up $101, the average transaction fees per block, according to blockchain.info. And the average number of transactions per block, 503. That's your Mad Money Machine Market Minute. Little follow-up now on the Silk Road seized coins. An article from Eric Kuluro out at News BTC, February 24th, says a Bitcoin investment fund by the name of Falcon Global Capital is looking to buy Bitcoin from the FBI. 27,000 Bitcoin, in fact. The Bitcoins are those seized from the Silk Road bust late last year and are worth just under $15 million at the present exchange rate. According to Brett Strapper, co-founder of the fund, which describes themselves as an SEC Regulation D private investment fund that invests solely in the Bitcoin markets, well, the FBI hasn't yet approved or denied the firm's offer. Strapper notes that Falcon's lawyers are calling daily to follow up on the offer. Oh, I'm sure they are, because here's the terms they're looking for. They've secured backing from a group of private investors to purchase all 27,000 Bitcoins for 15% below the daily value. Well, good luck getting them. And if you do, take advantage of those security precautions I mentioned in that previous episode. Thought I'd wrap up the show today by pulling some selected entries out of a article by Conrad S. Graff. Conrad with a K, Graff with one F. Out at ConradSGraff.com. His article is called Mt. Gox Fiasco Highlights Advantages of Bitcoin and Damage from Regulation. He says the bankruptcy of a centralized Bitcoin exchange, such as the Mt. Gox collapse, is a prime example of the type of trusted third-party risk to which Bitcoin itself was designed to provide an alternative. Although the original Bitcoin white paper particularly pointed out problems with people having to trust some third party to conduct financial transfers, an exchange facilitating impersonal market trading is also a type of trusted third party. Customers of such exchanges do not maintain control of their bitcoins, but instead exchange these for entries in a customer account on an internal corporate system. Customers then rely on the particular quality and reliability of the internal management, data, and auditing systems of their chosen exchange, to the extent and duration to which they leave balances there. He says Bitcoin was designed to be a new type of solution to the kind of counterparty trust or risk problem that the Mt. Gox news brings to light. Although the same issues are all too familiar to students of the long history of fractional reserve bank runs and systemic financial crises, he says importantly, this one is not systemic, but company-specific. One objective of Bitcoin's design was to reduce or eliminate the need for end users to rely on any such centrally managed or mismanaged credits. He says if you carry your own keys to the Bitcoins, then you have no counterparty risk. But if you don't hold your Bitcoins in such a direct way, then you don't hold them at all. Instead, you hold a claim on a specific exchange company or secure storage service. He says Mt. Gox customers were holding what are essentially Gox coins. That is, Mt. Gox brand Bitcoin credits. They were not holding Bitcoins. Such services can and should be sound of practice and strong of reputation, as appears to be the case with a growing number of existing services, for example, Bitstamp brand Bitcoin account credits and Coinbase brand Bitcoin account credits have attracted none of the fear and discounting of Mt. Gox brand Bitcoin account credits. And the article goes on and continues, concludes in this way, constructive work is underway to apply the conceptual and technical solutions that Bitcoin has brought into the world to the specific business of exchanging global Bitcoin for various local monies. These include a range of decentralized exchange protocols and methods of using the blockchain to confirm customer reserves. Contracting for independent third-party audits would also seem a reasonable business measure for participants in a competitive exchange landscape. Offering such audits could be another un- or under-tapped business opportunity. I'll have a link to the whole article so you can read the whole thing at madmoneymachine.com. Well, I want to thank you so much for listening to the Mad Money Machine this week. I'm Paul Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes millibits to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Tuesday, 2 p.m. at KCAA Radio and on the internet at letstalkbitcoin.com and madmoneymachine.com. In the meantime, buy some Bitcoin, spend some Bitcoin, donate some Bitcoin, and then replenish your Bitcoin. And a great place to donate would be the Mad Money Machine. Go to madmoneymachine.com and click on one of the buttons there to donate. Help us reach the amount of money that Larry Kudlow makes for disseminating his rubbish. And can I ask a favor of you? If you found anything at all you like about this show, could you tweet it and include @MadMoneyMachine to help others find the show? We need to spread the word about Bitcoin. The more people that find out about Bitcoin, the more valuable yours become. Call the Mad Money Machine voicemail line at 571-366-7121 and email me, bitcoin@madmoneymachine.com. Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, Mad Money Machine. Thanks so much. I'll see you next Tuesday. And between now and next Tuesday, go check out some of the other great Let's Talk Bitcoin Network shows, including, of course, Let's Talk Bitcoin itself, Stephanie Murphy's Sex and Science Hour, The Ed and Ethan Show, and Bitcoins and Gravy. You can catch a list of show times at kcaaradio.com, or you can go out to letstalkbitcoin.com and get those shows and even more. And the Mad Money Machine, of course, is available at those places, as well as madmoneymachine.com. See you next Tuesday.